Welcome back to the Ryer on YouTube channel. Travis Ryer back with you midday on a Wednesday. It is, of course, Georgia-Alabama week. We have a pretty good sample size, too, of this college football season to date. And with that, I thought I got to get my guy on the channel. I got to get Josh Pate, one of the preeminent voices in college football these days. Of course, the Josh Pate College Football Show. You want to check that out. Every Sunday, Tuesday, and Thursday, 8 p.m. Eastern. I've got that correct, right, Josh?
You got it. You got the name trademarked. You got the title right. We got everything rolling.
Well, I know. Yeah, you know, I had to have a lot of this stuff pre-screened, right, with Pate's people, and that even that's a trademark now. we've even been told that Pate's people has been trademarked by this guy, and so we came up with a segment, Pop Up with Pate, and now we, as you can see there on the screen, Josh, we've included the necessary trademark there too.
Yep, and very important to note, Travis, the up and lowercase was already trademarked, so we had to uppercase it. So we're good. We're fine.
Right. We had to make it a little bit different to make it ours, so to speak. But Josh, man, we go back a ways. I'm not going to get too nostalgic as we think about the past, but you know, the Columbus days, certainly go back to that. I would march up to that office in the second story of the home at the time. The wife would see me late night with my laptop going upstairs, kind of wondering what's going on. I'm just doing college football talk with Josh with Josh Pate, a fledgling star in the college football media business.
That was you and JC Sherbert. I had about three or four that were there in the early days, but I remember it always pained me to have to even request, hey, can you do something? Oh, what time? Oh, 10:15 Eastern, 9:15 Central. And among the many, many no's, there were a few yeses scattered in there. And you were one of them, my friend.
Well, you know, look, that was a period in my life, too, when the kids were young. So we would not get them in, you know, in bed till 9:30. So that's really when my work schedule used to start a lot of days, 10 o'clock till 3 a.m., crazy hours like that. But things have changed, no doubt about that. But Josh, obviously a lot to talk about in the world of college football. And what we're going to do is we're going to start with some topics maybe more centric to the Southeastern Conference in general. Certainly big news to wake up to this morning in terms of the UNLV quarterback situation. Wanted to get your thoughts on that as well. But we'll start in the league where it just means more, as we both know. And I wanted to ask you this, with basically three or four games under these teams' belts at this point, essentially the first month of the season, we're into this thing. What's been the biggest surprise for you in the Southeastern Conference?
I think LSU looking shaky, I think, has been mildly surprising. Now, they're not out of anything. Like, Florida is out of things. LSU's not. They lost the week one game to USC. And then the more we got removed from that, like, I watch them go play the SEC's version of USC a couple of weeks later, and they beat them. They win the game. Suspect officiating, but they win the game. But South Carolina runs for over 240. South Carolina gets after them on the line of scrimmage. Offensive line was supposed to be the strength of this team, and it's not been that. And so they lost the tailback for the season. But I think when you've stood in many a post-game press conferences and you've seen coaches come in there, and sometimes they look okay, like they're heading into a business meeting. Sometimes the hair's a mess, their face is red, they look totally disheveled. Most of the time that's after a loss. But like Saban post-USF game last year looked like that after a win. Brian Kelly had that look after the South Carolina game of a guy, as Meemaw used to say, who has spent his entire afternoon plugging 12 holes in the dam with 10 fingers. And somehow you did it. Like, somehow you figured it out. So that's a surprise to me. I would also, Travis, I'd say Florida not being the best team in the world, that's not a surprise. But just coming out of the gate, nothing firing, that was a little bit of a surprise to me. I thought they'd be more competitive than that.
I think in terms of coaching narratives, right, going into the season, it was Billy Napier and Sam Pittman at the top of that list in the Southeastern Conference. I'm with you there. I thought it would be more loud around Pittman in Arkansas at this point than Billy Napier. Maybe it would have been close, splitting hairs. But really, if the Hogs just do some fundamental things better in Stillwater, we're talking about an undefeated Arkansas team going into a matchup with A&M coming up here than we are even a 3-1 team coming off a road win at another beleaguered squad. Does that surprise you at all where Auburn is at this point with Hugh Freeze now three or four games into his first season and looking at that first month for Auburn thinking that's when the Tigers are going to have to make some hay? Because as we're seeing coming up here very soon, it doesn't get any easier.
If you don't have quarterback play, there's really no basement in terms of how bad it can get. True. So I guess it shouldn't surprise me. I'm not going to sit here and pretend I predicted Cal to beat him in the preseason. Once we got to game week, I thought it would be pretty competitive. But it is mildly surprising, not moderately or shocking or anything like that. You know, of course, the big debate down there is, well, Hugh's saying the quarterback play is not good enough. Whether you think that's throwing someone under the bus or just valid criticism, he's saying it. All right, so then the fan base is like, well, why didn't you go get a portal quarterback? These are the guys that you chose to ride with. I went down there in the spring, spent a day down there, watched him practice, spent time with Hugh Freeze and his entire team there. And I'm talking about behind-the-scenes team. And they had a plan laid out. Like they laid it out pretty thoroughly. And I want to be kind with the way I say this, but Travis, part of the plan that was laid out, part of the timeline that was laid out had baked into it the idea that they're probably not going to be very good this year. So I don't think they're stunned totally. Now, turning the ball over to the degree they've turned it over, that's never part of anyone's plan. That's right. That's not part of the equation. But I think that they believe as long as it doesn't become toxic enough to where the high school recruiting well gets poisoned, they'll be okay. And they can go if they need to, and they do. They need to go get a portal quarterback. They can do that. But everyone's getting drunk on Miami right now and what Cam Ward's doing. Mm-hmm. And you need to be paying attention to what Notre Dame's not doing. You need to be paying attention to what NC State's not doing. Like, there are a lot more examples of portal quarterbacks that flame out than ones that just completely catch fire. So that's not a cure-all. But I do still think that I'm not selling on the future of that program. But Travis, you can find folks who disagree. You can find folks in the coaching space and in the agency space who think the time's just passed Hugh Freeze. Like it's not going to happen for him. I'm not there yet, only because it makes you sound really foolish if you sell on a guy and then he goes on to, you know, win 10 games the next year. But it is really the turnover stuff's really concerning. But I also get what he's saying down there. You know, they're questioning him saying, what are you going to change? And he keeps saying, I'm not changing anything. If we don't turn the ball over, we trust what we do. It's worked before. So it's a rock and a hard place down there right now.
You kind of talk quarterback carousel really in the Southeastern Conference to this point. I have a hard time recalling this early in the season where we've seen this many different guys make starts. Now, some of that due to injury, like at Texas and South Carolina. And now we're going to see it at Mississippi State, unfortunately, with Blake Shapen. But some of it is performance-driven with Auburn going Thorn, Brown, Thorn. And then you look at Oklahoma right now, going from the former five-star in Jackson Arnold. Is it in those two situations, I know we just talked about Auburn pretty extensively, is there panic in these moves? And boy, when I hear about quarterback changes this early that are performance-based, I immediately thinking, well, Jackson Arnold's going to be somewhere else next year.
Yep.
You know, maybe Hank Brown ends up somewhere else next year. He's young, so is Jackson Arnold. But I got to think if you're one of these head coaches, you have to take that into account in terms of the big picture in your quarterback room.
Yeah, I think they have. I think at Oklahoma, they took it into account. The other thing to know about the Oklahoma situation is, so he comes in the bowl game, he plays, he throws some picks, and people watched it, Oklahoma fans watched it, and somehow, some way, they got to a place in their mind where that would just clean itself up. Mm-hmm. One game sample size, it'll clean itself up. So they go through spring, pretty tight on media out there, not a ton of access, and so you're limited on the information you get, and therefore they just believe that he's cleaned it up. Well, he hadn't cleaned it up. I mean, every bit of feedback I got from Oklahoma is turnovers are still a big issue for him. Fan base didn't want to hear it. So then they get to the fall. Turnovers are an issue. Travis, they're fortunate to have beaten Tulane. They're fortunate to have beaten Houston. Like they're
a pick six against Tulane.
Yeah. Like they may have already had a loss on the resume. So they implode offensively against Tennessee. But my point there is there were people on that staff that sort of were rooting for Hawkins to take the job outright, as unrealistic as that may be, given how NIL works. And so when they made the move, I think they had already, Brent Venables had already long since played out the contingency plans in his head. So there was no second guessing of, boy, are we damaging our asset here long term? It's irreparably damaged already. They don't believe his future's at Oklahoma. So then at Auburn, it's so fitting that they play each other this week, because I think Hugh Freeze can look at it and say, neither of these guys is going to be my starter next year anyway. Like, my starter's not on campus right now. So I'm going to do whatever it takes. It may be one this week. It may be one next quarter for all we know. But I think he's in a little different situation than maybe some of these other places where you have guys that you heavily invested in that are just falling flat. I think that's the difference in how, like, just gut-wrenching it is for an Oklahoma fan right now. Auburn folks know they don't have an option. Oklahoma fans thought the future of the program was in their lap, and they were just waiting on the Jackson Arnold era. And to watch that evaporate, it would be like Bryce Young not panning out. It would be like Tua not panning out. Like, how devastating is that? Everything else is built on that foundation.
And now, a month into the next season, the head coach is getting questions about Dylan Gabriel.
Right. Right. Yeah, we didn't think we were going to lick the index finger and go backwards to that chapter, but here we are.
Oh, they keep receipts, you know. And so that leads me to Brent Venables. You're going into the SEC. You're thinking, I get the sense from that fan base, they really want it to work with Brent Venables. He's endearing. They love him. They want him to be the guy. But again, you're going into some new frontiers here. Are we sure that at this point we've seen enough from Brent Venables to feel like a year or two from now, that's still going to be the case?
Yeah, it's Shane Beamer, basically. It's their guy. They handpicked him, so they feel ownership, as they should. That's not a bad thing about college football. I actually like that aspect of it. With Venables, it's really interesting because, kind of like Mike Norvell this past cycle, they believed they had seen enough, and they re-upped him. And despite the fact that there may have been a market for Norvell, I don't know of any market there was out there for Brent Venables. I don't think anyone was going to snatch him up, and yet they extended him, which just signaled to me they must be really comfortable that this is the guy. But I'm sure the same people who were comfortable that's the guy were also comfortable Jackson Arnold was their guy. So they better be right about him, because otherwise you're on the hook massively financially. And the thing about Oklahoma is, unlike some of these other places, Travis, there's a track record there. They know. I went when we were out there. I'd never been to an Oklahoma game before. And Joe Castiglione has been the AD there forever. And he caught wind of our trip, so he invited us to breakfast with him Saturday. And I sat there and peppered him with questions. Lincoln Riley questions, and those were great and all off the record, unfortunately. But just the hiring and how there's been this huge storm of uncertainty around Oklahoma in college football, but they've been a pretty steady commodity. And it's because they don't take those decisions lightly. There is a lot that goes into the blender before they pour out the decision. So I don't think it may be like a fan. I don't think it would be like them to be second guessing this early. They're more about defining what it's going to take to get it right and making the guy they hired get it right, instead of seeing the guy they hired not get it right and searching the market for the next guy. I think it would be really drastic before they took those steps.
It's kind of, as much as we hear college football is aligned with the NFL, and in a lot of ways it has, it's the opposite. In college football, it's harder in a lot of instances to fire the head coach. Yes. After a bad season or two. But you can make a change at quarterback. And in the NFL, you know, if you have one of these $50 million quarterbacks, guess who isn't going? Yeah. In the NFL, the quarterback isn't going, but the coach can go, no doubt about it. And with Oklahoma, maybe they were thinking along the lines of Eli Drinkwitz a couple of years ago. Remember when Missouri extended and raised Eli, and you're kind of thinking, what was that? Well, the next year they win 11 games and beat Ohio State in the Cotton Bowl. I guess we'll see how all that plays out. Hey, I wanted to ask you about this too, Josh, because this just came down late last night, this morning. UNLV quarterback Matt Sluka informs UNLV that after three starts, the Holy Cross transfer, a previous stop there in the Patriot League, is moving on due to commitments not fully met, I guess, based on what he was assured. Now, there's been some reports already today, Josh, that UNLV feels like they had lived up to that part of the negotiations to the point in the season that we're at. Is this tip of the iceberg stuff, or do you think this is going to be maybe a more isolated instance of something like this?
Certainly tip of the iceberg if the course doesn't correct itself. I don't see how there's a way around that. My biggest fear has actually been this entire thing is propped up on the idea that everyone values the same thing. Everyone values competition, the spirit of competition. Everyone values chasing a championship because that's what we value. We watch the game. We love it. We're consumed with it. So that's what we love. My biggest fear has always been as you expand your playoff or as you inject new themes into the sport, coinciding with expanding the playoff, and everyone says that's going to solve bowl opt-outs because now the games will have meaning. That works as long as everyone places meaning on the same thing. But my biggest fear is we get to a point where a group of players looks and says, I care about money more than a playoff game. I care about money more than winning a championship. Like the championship is sort of this man-made thing that I'm supposed to buy into and place value in. But this money right here, this is what matters more to me. That's been my big fear. Hope we never get there. It'd be foolish to think that's not a possibility, though. So I think it's tip of the iceberg. But on the other hand, Travis, as disgusted as I am by just the optics of it, period, no matter who's at fault, I kind of am glad it's happening this glaringly. I wish it was a bigger program. I wish it was unavoidable. Everyone had to open their eyes and pay attention to it because it probably takes that. The old Pierce Brosnan metaphor in Dante's Peak of the frog slowly boiling to death versus throwing a frog in a pot of boiling hot water. Well, if you just throw him in the pot of boiling hot water, he hops out. He realizes, ooh, something's wrong. And maybe this kind of stuff, just slapping you in the face, is what it takes for enough people with decision-making ability to say enough's enough. I say this acknowledging I don't have the answers. I'm saying it's not my job to have the answers, but there are people whose job it is to have the answers that just have sat there and propped their leg up on their knee and just kind of waited for things to right themselves. Well, that's not the way it works. And it's not the way it's going to work here. So that kid could have been screwed out of money he was promised. He could have shadily tried to renegotiate midseason. And either way, it's terrible. And so what do we do about it? Like, it's not we, because you and I can't do anything. What do they do about it?
There isn't the transparency either. I mean, it's pretty much a he said, he said,
right?
You know, with these situations. Now, UNLV, a public university, I don't know what the freedom of information laws are like out there, but there could be some pesky emails, maybe.
You know, text messages?
Text messages? Yeah. We'll have to wait and see with that. Yeah, you're right. I think tip of the iceberg wise, the thing that probably concerns you even more is that you get to the 12-team playoff and you're ready for first round games and you got some quarterbacks maybe negotiating deals. You know,
I'm telling you
before the start of the CFP.
When we got to expansion, I was never a huge fan of it, but I don't care about the playoff all that much. I love the regular season, but the proponents of it, they asked me where could it go wrong? And I talked about devaluation of regular season, but I also said, what's your impetus? Like what is the value proposition here? They said, well, more games have more meaning, like they didn't used to have meaning up until about 10 years ago. And then secondly, we'll avoid the opt-outs. And I said, how do you know players will never opt out of a playoff game? And they said, oh, you can't opt out of a playoff game. And I'm just sitting there thinking to myself, pre-Leonard Fournette, who would have ever thought about opting out of bowl games, period? Yeah. So that concept went from radical to norm over the span of like 48 to 60 months. And to think the next step couldn't happen is foolish. It absolutely could happen.
Yeah, and understand this is a fluid situation. We're doing this mid-morning, late morning on Wednesday. Still a lot to uncover there out in Vegas, and going to be fascinating to see where that story goes for sure. Another segment that I came up with for Josh Pate on this Wednesday, we're going to call this, Josh, I don't have the trademark yet, but we're going to call it Pate or Punt. I'm going to throw some scenarios at you. You're either going to say, yeah, that's Pate approved. Another kind of trademarks keep flowing, but or you're going to punt them. You're going to punt these. And so you talk about the meaningfulness of games in the regular season. I'm going to ask you about Alabama and Georgia Saturday night, Bryant-Denny Stadium, the matchup in college football for really about the last 8-10 years, at least I would say. LSU in some ways been more competitive in terms of win-loss records in that series, But this is the game. When you talk about stakes and sort of an ownership of college football, these have been the two programs, no doubt about it. With the 12-team playoff coming in, though, in your opinion, does this regular season matchup maybe lose some of its luster?
To this point, no. To this point, it has its luster. We have to be a few years into the playoff before we know what the new normal is. And everyone will have their own normal. Like this may feel to you authentically different than it feels to some guy in Des Moines, Iowa. But either way, we haven't retrained our mind to know how to think in the 12-team era. I think so. So this time around, it has every bit the luster it will always have to me, or it always has had. And also, as you well know, these border states, the whole Kirby versus Bama thing, this has been a season in itself. So that rivalry is almost notwithstanding. The thing I'm thinking about is when you get down the stretch a little ways and you know the playoff picture has started to emerge and we have a matchup of teams that we know for sure are in the playoff regardless. How does that giant safety net being built under the game affect the authenticity and luster of that game to me? Because that is the fabric that I think stands the risk of being torn a little bit. And I don't know about you, but I've never been willing to accept the trade-off of, well, yeah, Ohio State and Michigan may lose its luster, but Iowa State, Utah will have a whole lot more luster, because I'm taking games featuring teams that are capable of winning a title, and I'm removing the luster on those games to manufacture it on games featuring teams that are first or second round eliminations. And it's never made sense to me. But as of now, luster is still intact.
Great to be joined this morning by Josh Pate. Josh Pate's College Football Show. You're going to catch that every Sunday, Tuesday, and Thursday, 8 p.m. Eastern on YouTube. Josh, of course, does a lot of great work for CBS Sports as well. We are going through some Pate or punts here on a Wednesday morning. I'm going to ask you about this, the coordinator situation for Saturday night's game. You got new guys for Alabama, obviously, with Kalen DeBoer in there. Baptism by fire, maybe a little bit for Nick Sheridan, Kane Womack on the Alabama side. But is there any way that one of these coordinators in this game won't be scrutinized more than Georgia offensive coordinator Mike Bobo, Josh?
It's like he's a 31-year-old first-timer. The way people talk about him, it's like he is brand new to this whole thing. Mike Bobo has been calling plays since I was in the womb, essentially. He's been doing this stuff forever. And it's so funny. And you know, as well as I do, I grew up in Georgia. We've been around this merry-go-round multiple times just with Mike Bobo calling plays at Georgia. So what was old was new again, and et cetera, et cetera. I think it's no different. The way Kirby thinks is no different than the way Saban has thought, whether it's been Jim McElwain in there or being Bill O'Brien in there. Their way wins. The Georgia way will win if the Georgia way is executed the way it's supposed to be executed. And what's beautiful and terrible for Mike Bobo is when they win, Kirby Smart wins. When they lose, Mike Bobo loses. It's a fascinating concept. It's a really good proposition for Kirby. It's good work if you can get it. But I'll tell you the thing that as I was looking at the matchup, I was thinking about is another one of those matchups, and that is Kalen DeBoer. You're going to hear a lot talked about the fact that he's never faced Kirby. He's never faced Alabama. But what he did do is he faced the guy that Kirby let run his defense twice last year. He faced Dan Lanning as an underdog both times. And I was talking to some folks at Oregon yesterday, and they said, you know, he beat us throwing the ball the first time, and he ran it all over us the second time. And he wasn't supposed to be able to do the latter, by the way. And so I've seen him match up against a similar defense, a similar approach, and he didn't have a ton of issues with it. Now, no one's going through Georgia easily, and I'm not trying to present any alternative scenario, but I don't think if Bama loses Saturday night, it'll be because the moment was too big or it was just a culture shock sort of thing. It'll be because they got beat by a really good Georgia team and nothing more, nothing less.
I was thinking about it, trying to figure out who Mike Bobo is from the Alabama side of things. Mike Bobo is the late, great Mal Moore.
Beautiful.
He is Georgia's Mal Moore. Now, the old heads will get the reference. And Mal, God bless him, the guy who hired Nick Saban.
Mal's got to do something, Travis. Mal's got to do something.
That's all that needs to be said about the late, great Mal Moore. But he was an offensive coordinator at one time, certainly a couple of different times at Alabama. And specifically in that Gene Stallings era, Who was the guy day in and day out as this thing they call the internet was just starting to populate and do its thing? Mike's a beloved. He's like Georgia fans like to call a damn good dog, good quarterback, tough guy, right? All those things. But boy, that fan base absolutely gets after him. There's no doubt about that. What about the best player on the field Saturday night? I'm kind of starting that list with Malachi Starks, but yep. I guess there could be a difference, right? You could be the best player on the field Saturday night and not maybe be the most impactful player on the field in this game.
I think it needs to be Carson Beck, whether it will be or not. I know going to the quarterback's a classic cop-out, but I almost think maybe there will be a tendency to overthink the room here, and it's got to be Carson Beck. And here's the sort of man-maker moment for him. He doesn't have a star receiver on this team. He lost Brock Bowers, and while I think they have very adequate backfills, those guys are not nearly as good inline blockers as Bowers. They're not as physical yards after catch as Bowers. They don't provide sort of the efficiency injection that a Ladd McConkey or a Brock Bowers introduced to that offense last year. So what that means is quarterback takes on a disproportionate added amount of weight on his shoulders. But the thing is, if you're moonlighting as a future first-round draft pick, which Carson Beck we think is, this is the game you step up in. All due respect, man, no one cares as much about the Kentucky game. They care about what you did on the road in Tuscaloosa. And that's fascinating to me. I want to see what Ryan Williams does. I'll tell you, it's a big game for Jeremy Bernard. Bond had 5 catches for 79 in this game against Georgia last year. And I think him, Kendrick Law, someone like that, just the stat sheet may not blow you away, but difference-making catches to take some heat off Ryan Williams. And then that offensive line for Alabama. You'll find some folks who disagree with you on the draft stock value of a Tyler Booker. Caden Proctor still got another year to go. Jaden Roberts, like those guys, it's a big night for them as well. You get one shot to go up against Georgia. You get one shot to put that on film.
Yeah, I think for Alabama, the most impactful guy needs to probably still be Jalen Milroe.
Sure.
Because he can, unlike Beck, perhaps certainly as much, he can impact that Alabama offense through the air, obviously, but also with his legs. I mean, if you get that two-way run game going like they got at Wisconsin, I understand, that was not a J.J. Watt extra year of eligibility game for Wisconsin by any means. But if he can do that and have that presence, and in that Georgia win last December, he closed that game too. This is a game, once again, it's going to come down to, I think, closing time, Josh, and who has that guy that's going to be able to do it, I think, with the ball in his hands. That's going to be pretty big. What about the quarterbacks in the Heisman race anyway? I know there's a guy, as you said earlier, down at Miami doing a pretty good job right now. But the winning quarterback in this game Saturday night, whether it's Jalen Milroe, or you think about the way this thing can go, is the winning quarterback in this game Carson Beck, Jalen Milroe? Is that the odds-on favorite, in your opinion, to go on and maybe win the Heisman, or you got to see a lot more?
I don't think so either way, actually. I think the numbers that Ward will put up at Miami, given the schedule they have and given the fact that that's going to correlate with Miami being back, the romanticism around that story, I think, is going to be too much to overcome. And I think the style of play, if Georgia wins this game, that Beck will get a really good surge out of that. But I just don't think they're going to blow you away passing yards numbers-wise this year to the point where – and also, he's got a much tougher schedule this year. So there is a 17-6 game coming somewhere out there that probably dampens the mood around him. Ward doesn't have that, Travis. They go to Louisville. That's the toughest game they probably have remaining on paper. They play Va Tech this Friday night. They're about a 19-point favorite. And that game we thought may be sneaky competitive at the beginning of the year. And I can also tell you this, there's nothing fluky about that. He really is that player. So you don't have a guy putting up stats against inferior competition and just padding. You've got a guy that could do this at the highest level against Georgia's schedule that just happens to not have to play it. So it's going to be tough to overcome that.
Yeah, it doesn't feel like a game you can win the Heisman in, but you could be eliminated. Yeah. Right? It feels a little bit maybe like an elimination game because the stages for both Milroe and Beck, you think about the road games that Beck still got beyond this game, right? Texas, Ole Miss, there's candidates for those teams. Quinn Ewers,
Jackson, and got Tennessee Dart, home, yeah.
You know, Jalen's still got to go to Knoxville, where you're going to have Nico, who's blowing up right now. So, yeah, still a lot to go there, I would think, in that stretch. Let's talk about paths to the college football playoff, really for either of these teams Saturday night, but obviously we're more specific to Alabama here. You know, you look at Georgia for Alabama, you look at Missouri next month, you look at Tennessee next month, then you look at on the road at LSU, on the road at Oklahoma in November. If I told you right now, Alabama, and I know Alabama fans at this point, they're probably turning this off. This isn't good marketing. I understand that. But if Alabama were to go 3-2 through that stretch, and knowing what we don't know is the biggest problem with this. Do you think a 10-2 Alabama would qualify for one of those 12 spots?
Absolutely. Yeah. You'd be hard pressed to tell me either of these teams going two losses or out of the playoff, because no matter what the scenario is there, they've still got wins. Georgia would still have a couple of wins over very high level, potential top 10 caliber teams, whether they're ranked that at the end of the year is another thing. But yeah, I think they're both there. If they're not there, I think the SEC wants to exercise that look-in clause another year from now and take a long, hard look at, you know, I mean, what happens if you're putting in that G5 team over a 10-2 Alabama? I mean, no one in their right mind is looking at that thinking it makes any sense other than the predetermined schematic dictated that they go in. There's no merit-based reason why that would happen. So I think both of them are in. The better question on that front in the SEC is like, what if it's Missouri that has a loss or two? Because not all 10-2s are created equal in this conference, especially with the more dynamic scheduling this year.
What if Missouri's 10-2, though, with a win over Alabama and Alabama's 10-2?
Well, then I'd want to know who in the world.
And 10-2 Alabama has a win over 10-2 Georgia.
Yeah, that gets fun.
That just kind of just underscores again that at the end of all this, it could still get very, very crazy. Well, it's always great catching up with you, Josh. Certainly appreciate you taking the time. You have, I'm sure, but need to check out Josh over there on his YouTube channel. It is exploding, it seems like, on a daily basis. That's the Josh Pate's College Football Show, Sunday, Tuesdays, and Thursdays at 8 p.m. Of course, Josh, you see him on CBS Sports as well. Hey, Josh, appreciate the time, my man.
I appreciate you having me, my friend.
There he goes. Josh Pate joining in for a pop-up with Josh Pate program here on Ryer on YouTube. If you enjoyed the program and you haven't subscribed to the channel as of yet, certainly hope you'll do that right now. Hit that subscribe button for us. Hit the subscribe button. There is a notification bell there as well. If you would hit that notification bell, that would help us out tremendously. And a thumbs up for the program, a like. We would greatly appreciate that also. So for Josh Pate, Travis Ryer, thanking you once again for joining us right here on Ryer on YouTube. Until next time, so long, everybody.